You're listening to Addiction Medicine Beyond the Abstract, the official podcast of the Journal of Addiction Medicine. If this is your first time listening, thanks for coming. Addiction Medicine Beyond the Abstract is produced for your enjoyment and is focused on the latest journal published research and science in the field of addiction medicine. Remember to add us to your favorites in iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at ASAMorg and Facebook. Now, let's go beyond the abstract.
Welcome to Addiction Medicine Beyond the Abstract. I'm your host, Dr. Sean McNeil, and today we're joined by Dr. Marisa Tan. She's an Epidemiology Intelligence Service, or EIS, fellow for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention through the Philadelphia Department of Public Health. Dr. Tan, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Let's go ahead and get started by having you talk a little bit about what you do and how you get started in the field of addiction medicine.
Yeah, I think it began for me in preventive medicine residency in Baltimore a few years ago. It was a few years after the synthetic opioid wave of the opioid epidemic had started. And my experiences there during residency really piqued my interest in health equity and the health of people who use drugs. So after that, I went to addiction medicine fellowship at University of Maryland Medical Center, learned a ton from faculty there. The clinical treatment for substance use disorders was really this positive regard for people who use drugs in practice. And I think that has carried with me throughout my career aspirations. So I'm currently in EIS, a CDC fellowship. My position at the Philly Health Department focuses on the HIV and hepatitis C syndemic among people who use drugs. And that has given us the opportunity to look at some of the harms related to substance use and think and bring the worlds of public health and addiction medicine together for me.
That's a great background you have. Now, some of our listeners may be familiar with xylazine, but some may not. So could you explain what xylazine is and how it's being used, and also how widespread the issue is?
Yeah, so xylazine is an alpha-2 agonist that produces sedative effects. It's known to people, at least in Philly, as Trank when it's marketed as such. And it's been present in Philadelphia, at least, since 2000. There were also some studies and reports finding xylazine and its associated complications in Puerto Rico during those 2000s. And then most recently, it's been detected in lots of jurisdictions, lots of geographies, drug supplies, more than it had previously. So it's a topic that has become really important for us in clinical addiction medicine and also in public health, as it's got all these associations with wounds and potential infections and complications there.
Okay, so is the concern that it encourages opioid use, or is the concern more about the effect of the xylazine use on its own?
So great question. They're really used together with most often, I should say. So xylazine is thought to lengthen the euphoric effects. So people say that xylazine or Trank gives fentanyl legs, since fentanyl is a short-acting opioid. So we in public health and addiction medicine have been concerned with is it because it's not an opioid, but it is sedative. It has these associations with wounds that, in some cases, people end up losing their limbs because of the complicated nature of those wounds. And so it's mostly the concern is not necessarily about encouraging use, but additional harms that this new or this this different substance in the drug supply has caused.
Okay. Now, in the paper, you draw some connections between specific opioids and the xylazine use. For example, there was a finding that there's a large connection between xylazine use and fentanyl use. So do you see a strong connection between xylazine use and the rise in the popularity of certain opioids?
So we didn't really perceive that it was increasing someone's use of fentanyl, but we perceived it more as it's useful for people who prefer fentanyl. Several years ago, when fentanyl analogs first came on the scene, preference for fentanyl was low. As it's become the major opioid in many illicit drug supplies, that preference changed. And so what we perceive the xylazine use is really just mixed in with the dope supply. It's some consider it an adulterant, some consider it a use for itself, but we didn't perceive that was necessarily increasing someone's desire for fentanyl.
All right. Now, you mentioned that one of the limitations of this study, and this is the case in many papers, one of the limitations is that the data capturing is self-reported. So do you feel that there may be some reason individuals may not want to report their xylazine use, or that there might already be a stigma developing surrounding its use?
Great question. So I think in this sample, it's probably not as much in this setting, just the way that the National HIV Behavioral Surveillance Project runs. It's a one-on-one interview that's anonymous with people who don't know each other. And the self-report of xylazine is asked pretty simply, use in the past 12 months and preference for xylazine on a Likert scale. This was in 2022, in summer to fall during the PWID cycle. The project focused on people who inject drugs, and so at that time, xylazine was a known issue, but I think the stigma associated with it, at least in how I've perceived it, has grown since then. So I think that's legitimate, but I don't think it as much affected data for this project.
Okay. And I wanted to ask, because xylazine is out there in the illicit drug supply, some people may be using it without having knowledge, so it might be in their body already. Are there any tools or laboratory tests that can help physicians or other clinicians determine if it's in a patient's system?
There are laboratories that can test for xylazine, and so that's a great tool. Oftentimes, a patient's knowledge of their use may be based on a differential experience of it. Like, they usually use something and it causes this effect, but when they use this new supply, something different happened, like a blackout that wasn't expected. But the laboratory test for xylazine are available. There's also xylazine test strips that can help an individual know for themselves if their drug supply has xylazine present in it, so that they can make their decision on their supply.
Very good. I also want to make sure to ask if you have any clinical advice or pearls that you feel would be important for clinicians to know about.
Yeah. I think this is informed from my own experience. I do still practice clinically a little per week. And I think what this article has meant to us in the health department at Listener Project, we wanted to emphasize that healthcare providers that we recommend healthcare providers really support their patients and believe them. I think our limitations of testing for xylazine and resource limitations sometimes catch us off guard of what to do, but I think we can also bring this knowledge to patients, use what we do have with urine drug test or whatever drug checking that or laboratory tests that we do have to bring awareness to patients of what's in their system, so that they can know for themselves whether what they intended to use was in their system or not, and what might be a surprise to them. There's some good resources out there. I think the Philly Health Department has resources on management of wounds for people who have used xylazine, recommendation to providers, and then just as a kind of a separate call for providers could and should treat withdrawal aggressively, because this might be, I'm going to start over for that. Withdrawal may be different, and so listening to patients is important.
Okay. And are there any final points that you wanted to touch on that our listeners may want to hear?
I just wanted to emphasize that we hoped that by framing xylazine use patterns and preferences in the concordant and discordant use really underscore the autonomy of people who use drugs. So in thinking about plain use, we're just hoping that these results mean for the healthcare providers, policymakers, public health practitioners, that they'll be more willing to support policies and interventions like point of care and drug checking, surveillance that really uphold the autonomy of people who use drugs.
That's a really good point. You know, we should seek to always empower our patients as we move forward in their treatment. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Tan, for joining us on the podcast. This has been a real pleasure.
Great. Thanks so much. Have a good rest of your day.
Dr. Marisa Tan's article, Xylazine Use Among People Who Inject Drugs, Philadelphia, 2022, can be found in the March-April 2024 issue of the Journal of Addiction Medicine.
This ends today's podcast. Thank you for listening to Addiction Medicine Beyond the Abstract. All of today's show links can be found in the show notes. Remember, you can preview additional abstracts at journaloffaddictionmedicine.com. This program was produced by the American Society of Addiction Medicine.